live from the Findlay Toyota Studios. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company. It is a Monday, busy week. On the way is football is here. We kind of marked it last week with the release of Hard Knocks. Offseason with the Giants, some good stuff came out of that. And now we've got multiple football media days in town with the Big 12 hitting the ground tomorrow, Mountain West hitting Las Vegas on Wednesday, and we'll get into all the other cool stuff. Also, essentially, an NBA national convention here with not only the Summer League at the end of the week, but Team USA is on the ground over at the facilities, right, at UNLV, and going to hit T-Mobile in the middle of the week, so busy stuff on the way. Lots of WNBA today. Willie Ramirez is in again as the company. Griffin is here. Run the show. What's going on, buddy?
What's happening? So, you know, I noticed that. Have you noticed this when you said NBA convention? Have you noticed there have been some people out there that have been sort of, I don't know if you want to call it trolling, or all of a sudden they're adding that, well, which NBA are you talking about? Because they're offseason. So is it MNBA? Like we're calling it WNBA? So in reality, since the NBA owns a WNBA, the Aces have been home outside. They ran to L.A. real quick, but they've been playing tomorrow. So with Team USA here, Summer League setting up shop, I know the Aces are going on a road trip, but altogether, NBA could be WNBA just as much as it could be MNBA.
No, it couldn't. Okay. There are less than 1,000 people in the entire world who get confused between the NBA and the WNBA.
100%.
It's the NBA. Snarky. It's branded. It's not changing, really.
No.
Although this could be, you're right, this could be a new troll thing, a new complaint from the WNBA that they need.
They need
more clarity. They would like to see the NBA become the MNBA.
Yeah,
I can't do that.
No, neither can I.
I'm too lazy to change vernacular at this age. It's very difficult just speaking, coming in, doing the show, getting things straight.
If it's April.
Can't do it.
If it's the first weekend of April and I come in and ask you, Steve, did you watch the Final Four this weekend? Would you say yes, no, or which one? Women or men? Or do I have to say, did you watch the women's Final Four? Imagine this past April. Realistically, if you had asked that, you'd say, heck yeah, I watched Caitlin Clark. You know it, I watched South Carolina. You know I watched Angel Reese. I mean, could be. Just saying.
You wouldn't have to ask. I had no problem this last year differentiating. So it's a good try. It's a good try. We're heavy on the WNBA, especially days that Willie is here, and especially after a weekend where they played a couple of games, and the break for that league is coming up here in, what, less than 10 days. Mm. So what's your favorite thing going on right now with the NBA convention? Are you more into Team USA being here and playing this exhibition against Canada or NBA Summer League?
It's sad to say this. This is going to be the first year since I locked in with AP in 2012 that I won't be it either. But it's Team USA because it's an Olympic year. So I've had the side eye on that while I've been doing other things. Just, you know, watching some of the interviews, listening to what LeBron's had to say, some of the funny exchanges. But yeah, I'm a little more locked in with Team USA. I am intrigued by Bronny James. Somewhat a little more out of concern. Just we talked about last week, you know, this is a kid that's a year removed from having cardiac arrest. So just, you know, that's just genuine concern.
What a great story to root for. Yeah. And yet lots of people aren't.
But then also, which will now be second-year player and hometown guy, Julian Strother will be with the Nuggets this year at the Summer League. So obviously I'll be keeping an eye on that.
Exhibition game should be good depending on who plays. Canada's got a pretty stacked team with lots of young guys especially who play in the NBA. So that'll be interesting. Team USA headed up by Steph Curry and LeBron. Was watching Steph shoot video. Was watching video from Mendenhall of Steph shoot from the international three-point line. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. That's like me shooting a layup, and I don't even think I could make as many layups as Steph was making from three at the short distance. It is nothing for him. It's crazy. No. So crazy. They go to Abu Dhabi after this, play Australia and Serbia. Then they go to London and they will have exhibition games against South Sudan and Germany. Anything strike you in those list of teams? Australia, Serbia, South Sudan, and Germany.
No. Is it supposed to?
Is
Australia or Germany got somebody big? I don't know what the other
is. I'm really not up on world events, and this isn't even a current world event because I did a little research because I was intrigued by South Sudan. I was like, wait, what's going on here? And then I looked it up like, they split up the country. It was 13 years ago. Missed that one. Long civil war.
Yeah.
But I was interested to see what the roster looked like. So some of the lead players on there are Bol Bol. I felt like the names I recognized were all seven-footers. This is a country that sprouts a lot of seven-footers. Another kid on the team is, his last name is Malwatch, and he is going to Duke. He is 7'2". You got to see this kid. Like, they already got Cooper Flagg in this class, and then there's Malwatch, and we're talking, like, on this team, this year's Duke team. Oh, boy. So, kind of interesting. You know, you kind of forget everyone's origins. I don't really try to process in the NBA who's from where. Every once in a while you think about it, but what's changed over the last, what now, really 30 years? The growth of basketball around the world and high-level basketball players. Once Team USA went in there with dream teams and was beating the crap out of people, the sport has exploded over the last 30 years, and there's great basketball players all over the place.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's 100%. Now, to that point, what I have, you know, I mean, it's back to the women, but when the WNBA teams have been tweeting out the graphics with, you know, headed to Paris, they're just starting to name some of the foreign players, are starting to name with the, you know, Australia's putting their team together. And so, I mean, you sort of see some of the Canada that they're the other representative. So I've kind of paid attention to that going, oh, I didn't realize that she was from there or that person was from there. So,
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
So there's 15 players a team, 12 teams of the WNBA. So you're looking at what, 180 players? International.
144 players.
144
12
players.
12 to 12, yep.
Okay. International players, what makes up the league of, in terms of the population of international players?
I'm going to guess there's probably 20%.
20%?
I would say there's probably 25 to 28, yeah.
Okay.
It'd be a safe bet. It's going to be give or take. But, you know, I mean, and some of the bigger names that you didn't realize, like Rebecca Allen from Phoenix, who's making a big difference, came over from the Connecticut Sun. I'm not going to butcher her name, but Ezzy from up in Seattle, she's playing for Canada. There've been some. I think Australia's pick. I've seen that team be announced, so I wouldn't be surprised. You know, your girl Liz Cambage won't be on that team.
I swear, I was just going to ask.
Right
when she's around.
I saw the little corners of your mouth going up to smile. I knew what you were thinking.
Well, because I was thinking of Australian players. There's been some really good ones in the WNBA, and they're one of the better international squads. And then I was thinking of all the crap that, because all the stuff that happened in the WNBA, that really wasn't anything compared to what she did with her home country.
No.
She's a clown.
I'll tell you a funny.
And I saw her walking around at some recent game, maybe a Sparks game.
Probably.
And she's not that old. Is she even 35 yet?
I don't think so.
She should be playing in the league, but what's the point, right? Everyone in the league is like, it's too much.
So yesterday, which we'll get into later, I'm sure, talk about Asia breaking the franchise record. But I talked to her. She was talking about – she always gives thanks to the foundation that laid, you know, of, you know, whether it's in the WNBA or whether it's been with this franchise from Utah to San Antonio on to Vegas. And I wanted to ask her, has she actually taken a step back to appreciate that when she got here in 2018 with Lambeer and in those 6 years – she's always talked about building her own culture, building a new era, right? Ushering it in. So as I'm asking that question, in my head, I'm going, you know, Asia, players have come and gone with the roster that's been built under Becky. You know, you've seen faces come and go, and I swear to you, I was going to name a couple of names. You know, Derek is gone. I was going to say, you know, you've had to filter out some personalities to bring some in, and the very first person I thought of was Liz Cambage.
Yep. So, by the way, she is 32 years old and now playing in the WNBA. How silly is that?
It's terribly silly because I think with the right coach, especially with some of the personalities that are in this league right now as coaches, Becky Hammon, Teresa Witherspoon, Tanisha Wright down in Atlanta, I think there are specific coaches where she could play with them and they could coach her. But it's sad just because I think what's taken place and some of the derogatory terms that she has said and been you know, some say
she can't coexist with teammates. There's always some drama. There's always some. But what was me?
But I think that there's some coaches that are regulating properly now.
Okay,
that's not going to stand.
All right, we're talking about all the events in town this week, and football really begins this month with the hype and all the media days and camps opening up around the NFL. I think the earliest one, I can't remember which teams. I think it's July 13th. Rookies are in with one of the teams, but we actually got a release today about the Vegas Kickoff Classic. We'll have a matchup of Utah and Miami in 2027. We got the 2027 announcement. It's kind of interesting. We're planning this thing way out at the Al.
It is, but that's 3 years, right?
Yeah.
I want to say it was 3 years ago. Where were we? Two or three. We were. You know where we were? We were on location.
Mm-hmm.
And Cicenti came on and broke while we were. Oh no! You know you were not. It might have been me and Adam.
Okay.
But we broke USC LSU in this same game, which is going to be this year. We broke it. I want to say it was either 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, it was about a year and a half in advance. Really? It was 3 years ago?
2 or 3 years ago. I don't remember.
No, I'm saying. I thought it was only maybe a year and a half.
It was, yeah.
All right. So you have big stuff coming up. You got all the stuff you're going to be covering. And then you go on a summer sabbatical, which I think everyone, if you can get the time off, should probably do that. Maybe not the summer, but whenever you want to do it, you're going to have a long drive. So how long's the drive? Like 2,100
miles? 2,100
miles.
Last year I did it in 3 days. To get there.
How do you kill the time?
Last year I streamed The Sopranos, and it made it easier because I've watched that show at least from start to finish, literally no exaggeration, no embellishment, at least 24 times from start to finish. So it was more like an audio book. I didn't have to look at TV screen. I could hear it and know what was going on.
How many hours do you need for a TV show? You want to pick a new TV show to kill the time?
Well, it took me 8 hours. I did 8 hour, 12 hour, 10 hour. So what is that? 30 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's so 30. That was 30 episodes.
So you need something that's 2 or 3 seasons long,
at least.
Okay.
Yeah.
702-364-1100 is our text line, or Finley Kia text line, 702-364-1100. I'll have to think of some 2 and 3 seasons.
Somebody suggested you.
I don't know, man. That's when you sent that over, I was like, I don't know if you want to be watching that.
But I don't also know if I want to watch something for the very first time, or if it's something that, you know, remember, I gotta stay focused on the road.
Yeah.
And there are.
Who's got suggestions for Willie? Send him in on text.
Yeah, send him
2 or 3 season shows. I mean, I put down some new shows, but they're really only, you know, 1 or 2 seasons. House of the Dragon is the next, you know, is the Game of Thrones now. You watch Game of Thrones?
No,
never got into it, right?
I'm an 85% Adam Hill, where if the thing ain't happening in real life, I'm kind of not into it. But there are certain things that intrigue me that are good storylines where I'm not 100% against it. I watched that one, I can't even remember the name of it now, where the plane, when they arrived, it was 5 years later, and I got into that for some reason. But like Game of Thrones and dragons and vampires and stuff like I just don't. If it's not happening to superheroes, if it don't happen in real life, I'm not into it. I can't get into it. There are certain, like I said, certain weird, I don't know. It's got to be intrigue me.
Did you watch all of Chow House, both seasons?
What is it?
Chow House? You never watched it?
No. Is that the one you showed with the food stuff? Yeah. I bounced around and watched those.
Yeah, it's a cooking competition in mostly southern Italy.
Yeah. No. You had me watch a fried chicken thing, and then from there.
Oh, God, you're making references from like years ago.
And then from there,
I think
watched.
That was a David Chang.
I bounced around to different shows in that series, and I watched one where they did truck food trucks.
I think cooking shows are probably too visual.
Yeah, no, yeah.
To be doing it when you're driving.
Yeah.
This is only one season, but I like Dynasty about the Patriots on Apple TV. But you got to have access to Apple. That's the thing. Yeah. All right. Give some suggestions on the text line. Willie has a long drive coming up in a couple of weeks. So TV series, 2 and 3 years long at least, that he could watch. You got to drive back too. So maybe something that has six or seven seasons. Again, the text line is 702-364-1100. That's our Finley Kia text line.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Talking about Cooper Flagg, potential number one pick. I mentioned him when I was mentioning the South Sudanese Olympic team with the kid Mal Watch. MyWatch 7'2", Cooper Flagg, 6'10", and today he's over right down the road from us here in Vegas at Mendenhall. He's practicing against Team USA, and Ben Golliver, I think he's from the Washington Post, put out some video, so he's making some baskets. I don't know if he's torching. I saw the description. He's torching them. It's a 23-second video of mashed together of a couple of makes, but that's going on here as we do have our NBA National Convention, otherwise called Team USA, and the NBA Summer League here in town. I was just going to retweet that and say for Las Vegas, another reason to dislike Duke. They've reloaded with potentially the number one and two picks in the draft. Mixed weekend. Did I say two wins for the Aces over the weekend? A win and a loss. I think I might have said that incorrectly about 8 minutes ago. So they lose at the Sparks. They bounce back against Dallas. They win. Can we talk about the Sparks game?
Sure, but I mean, if I know you're trying to say weekend, and that was a Friday, but then Thursday they were here and beat up on Washington. So
right, but Washington and the Sparks stink, and they went a splitting with them.
Yes,
can't lose to the Sparks. Come on.
Well, it's a second loss to the Sparks this year.
I know.
So
it's
either
two,
they've
two
got,
losses
they've
against
got,
a team that's going to win 10.
We're talking about especially after losing Cam Brink. There's something to be said with Kurt Miller being the coach, De'Erica Hamby with a chip on her shoulder. You know, they're also down Lexi Brown, who's out indefinitely because she has Crohn's disease, so that flared up. There's just something that they've got. But Becky Hammon downplayed this yesterday, and she said, no, Willie, no excuses. I'm not giving them a pass. But it was their third game in four nights, including that incredible 20,000-plus fan in, you know, in the seats game against Caitlin Clark and in the Indiana Fever at T-Mobile. 2 days later, they here against Washington. They leave on a midnight charter, or they got there at midnight, something like that, and they get into L.A., and then they played that night. And it's somewhat of a border rivalry. I mean, it's a Western Conference rival. It's a state rival, you know. But, yes, they lost in overtime. They didn't play the defense that they had been playing. They looked lackadaisical.
That was the problem.
They were tired.
The freaking pathetic seals on fronting De'Erica Hamby.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Hamby had a big basket down the stretch. She was just inside the free throw line, and they got a pass over the top in for an easy make. That might have been one where they got the plus one, but
it's like
she dominated in the post. I'm like, that can't happen.
It's like Kelsey Plum always says. It's like Asia Wilson says. They have to be prepared for every team on every night because they're going to get everybody's best. When you sort of pigeonhole that to the Western Conference teams, like you go to Atlanta, Atlanta's going to give you their best shot because they know you're a powerhouse. But Atlanta's going to have that chip on their shoulder against New York and Connecticut, right, because they're in the Eastern Conference. They're in the same time zone. So you're going to get that type of effort. And the Western Conference is stacked this year. Stacked. Minnesota, Phoenix, Vegas, Seattle. There's four of the top six teams in the league, and they're out of the West, right? So, I mean.
ESPN Power Poll today. Connecticut number one in the league.
Mm-hmm.
New York two. 13-7, Aces three. Lynx are four, Storm are five.
Right.
What? A lot of respect for the Aces.
Well, the Aces had dropped. I had them as low as seven in mine.
Okay.
And
now what?
Now they're number one.
What?
Absolutely.
They just lost to the Sparks.
Come on.
So what do you mean, come on?
Connecticut went 3-0 last week, so everybody's jumping them back up into the number one, but they had just previously lost 3 of 4. The Liberty split last week. They also, you know, also lost in Long Island to the Lynx in the Commissioner's Cup, then got revenge. The Lynx are now one of the top power teams that are in a bit of a lull. Seattle's playing great basketball, but they lost to the Chicago Sky in the first of a back-to-back games against Angel Reese in Seattle. So those top five teams are going to be tough in the playoffs. Right now I have the Aces number one. They're back to number one. They were one to start the season, and then when they hit their decline, I dropped them. Then I got them as low as seventh. And I got mocked the first week that I dropped them to seventh, and sure, and then they lost, and guess where they were? In seventh place in the league at the time. So But right now, with the way they're playing, reserve for Friday, Chelsea Gray back, everybody playing the roles that they're used to playing, they're the number one team in the league, hands down.
364-1100, 364-1100, giveaway time. We've got two tickets to go see the Front Row Card Show, July 13th and 14th at the Rio. 450 tables of cards, comics, and collectibles. You can get your tickets at frontrowcardshow.com. Two tickets right now, and you qualify to win $200 in Card Show Bucks. $200 in Card Show Bucks. You qualify for that. Front Row Card Show, Rio, July 13th and 14th. Big show. You can get your tickets at frontrowcardshow.com. Two tickets right now, 364-1100.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
A lot more on the Aces weekend, going back to Friday. Loss and a win. And more of the big stories with the rookies, rookie class, putting up numbers. Double-double streak for Angel Reese. Triple-double over the weekend for Caitlin Clark. You know, we had some unfinished business on Friday. I know you wanted to get after Paige VanZant and the flinching, because Adam Hill got after PVZ and the flinching, and I kind of shut you down. We were up against it. I started yelling at you. So
that made me feel like I was back home.
He's back! He's back! He's back in the company! Willie Ramirez is here. Do you think she can be a successful fighter, or was her flinching really that big of a deal in getting her out of that first fight? Not allowed to flinch, folks.
I would have liked to have been there in person.
Can't move your head.
I'm a big in-person person. I'm not even a go-back-and-watch-the-replay guy. The only thing that I really can get into and watch and replay of is boxing matches, where I'm intrigued by, because I can sit down and I'll actually score them.
Right.
But so I haven't even gone back to watch Power Slap 8. I didn't get to go because I was at the NHL draft. But I will tell you that flinching is it's in the rules. And so once it was in the rules from Power Slap 1, and you know how much I was into it, and, you know, I didn't necessarily debate or argue with Adam about it, because I was a fan of it, and he isn't. He doesn't think it should have been regulated, whether or not it should have been. It was, so I got into it because of the live performance. So I haven't gone back to watch. The clips that I've seen, she broke the rules. It's in the rules. It's in the regulations. You abide by it. There's no, give or take. No. And I said this Friday, because we brought it up at Power Slap 7, that we saw more fouls and more inconsistencies with calls of fouls or no calls. And we questioned Dana on it. He said it's something that we definitely have to address and get better at. Absolutely. He acknowledged it after Power Slap 7.
Okay.
If it's happening in Power Slap 8, you need to fix it. Otherwise, you look like a joke.
All right. I like Power Slap.
I love it.
But I find all of those fights at a competitions at a pedestal intriguing. Like, I don't follow arm wrestling. And I don't even know who the one guy is. There's one dude who looks like he's a little older. He's like 6'6", and he just takes people on who are just massive, and is just laughing as he's doing it. And sorry, I know you guys are big gym bros, you and Griffin. I do get a kick out of, like, the giant muscled guys in an athletic competition, especially if it requires a beard, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And who the hell is Larry Wheels?
Larry Wheels is – so he goes on – you know, he's become popular because of his physique and of course, you know, things – you can put
a – bodybuilder?
Yeah, he's a bodybuilder, but he's an arm wrestler.
Oh, he is?
He's a professional.
Is he good?
Yes.
He must be good. Okay.
Okay, so –
so he took on – they did – there's no pedestal. It just – okay. This is – I mean, I guess this is – you know, all these competitions basically come from the streets, right?
Yeah.
So this is like, hey, let's play a game of pick-up slap,
right.
Like pick-up basketball. Oh, okay. Larry Wheels.
I can do that.
Right.
Right.
I can take a slap. So there's some video out there with the crazy Hawaiian who we had on a couple weeks ago, who's 6'2", 384.
Co-Avierness.
Yep. So it's him and this Larry Wheels guy at a gym. And I don't know. The guy's in the gym with the freaking 54 packs, whatever. I guess a 48 pack, whatever it would be. The muscle guys, I guess they look at the crazy Hawaiian. They're like, who's this fat slob? Okay. Let's get our slaps on.
I don't know if anybody looks at at Koa and says, okay, whatever, because of his size. I think it's more so they get confident because of how big they are that they can take the shot. They don't realize the impact that that's coming.
Yes.
And I told you this story multiple times. I've talked about Koa from Power Slap 1 when I was writing just a scene setter for AP, and Shane Victorino had been telling me, I've been watching this slap fighting before Dana did it, and I've been following this guy called the Crazy Hawaiian. He's right over there. Go introduce yourself. He'll give you some great quotes. So I went up to him, and here's this massive dude with hands as big as my head. And I go to introduce myself. He goes, hello, brother. How are you? And my hand disappeared in his hand, and he shook it with both hands, you know, just kind of embracing a very gentle giant. But you get him up there on the podium, and the dude's vicious. He's got his own moniker, he's got his own entrance song, and he's become a fan favorite. And in my opinion, he's the face of it. So, yeah, you're going to look at it and say, if you're a bodybuilder, and maybe say, I could do that too, because you don't realize what is involved.
This Larry Wheels is about 6'1", 250.
He is.
And super muscle guy. And then what happened?
He's a chirper.
What happened?
Oh, he got knocked out in the middle of the gym.
Rocked.
In his house. Right, in his house. He's a stand-up.
Go lift some weights!
First, as Koa, and for those not watching, I'm mouthing, eating. Koa took a shot, and then
he eats the slap. He spoons
and
it
then
up.
He knocked out Larry Wheels. Well, just quick background, a close friend here in town, who's a world-renowned power lifter, who's a world champion back in the day, he's created his own device, Brandon Allen. He was training with one of the guys that was in this last Power Slap 8. All leading up to it. And he had messaged me every time I go to. He said, I got to go to one of those, Willie. I got to go. So he finally went to Power Slap 8 to watch his friend.
Yeah.
So I messaged him before the show. I was like, hey, Larry Wills, that's your guy, right? He goes, that's the guy I arm wrestled in Dubai. I was like, that's the guy I handicapped. I never watched it, but I handicapped. I was like, he's going to wear himself out, and you're going to win the best of 7. And Brandon took him out in a pay-per-view arm wrestling match. Brandon says, I want to do the Power Slap. I would do it if I would get paid. I said, I'm going to let Dana know.
I got a question for you on the way back. Right. If these bodybuilders actually will want to be in Power Slap, because I think that the physicality, I mean, this is what I'm sure Dana White would be really excited about, all different body types and these guys who are bordering on the super heavyweight. But we're going to get into a little boxing on the way back. Steve Kim, his spot is presented by Snack Nutrition, is up after a weird boxing weekend. Big wins by Zepeda and Stevenson. Shakur Stevenson, was that a big win?
Steve Kim, the host of the 3 Knockdown Rule, joins Cofield and Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
It's Monday, that means time to bring in Steve Kim. What's up, Steve?
Afternoon, gentlemen. Start of another great week.
Yes, very interesting weekend around boxing and kind of mixed results in terms of the reception received by winners Shakur Stevenson and Bill Zepeda. So first of all, let's get to Stevenson. Is that about what you expected?
Kind of, sort of. Look, the expectation was that on his way to free agency, final fight of his top-ranked contract, you know, much like Teofimo Lopez, they kind of teed it up for him. And, you know, I don't think they hit a home run. It's probably an 18-hop single, you know.
Yes.
So,
it was a duck fart.
He won. And he dominated the fight, much like Lopez did. But I don't think they left that impression he wanted. And then, unfortunately, Shakur showed a lot more fight over Twitter on Sunday than he did on Saturday. So it is what it is. It's par for the course in terms of that guy.
Yeah, what is this? I saw a video of fans leaving in Newark. You know, that's his home area. They were leaving early. And then I guess one of his first big hits on social media was claiming that it was a work by ESPN. It was an organized work to show people walking out. What is he talking about?
Well, I mean, look, there seems to be this perception that Top Rank does the production. They don't. It's not like their deal with UFC where Dana White insisted, hey, we run the production here, which means we don't get a halftime show in between every fight. They actually move things along. But look, you know, Shakur's not being really honest about that because, number one, ESPN controls the production, and it wasn't just the last round or before the last round where people were exiting. That was actually happening around rounds, 8 and 9, based on people that were there and some videos that I was able to, you know, find on Twitter. Look, he's a very skilled fighter or a boxer, but when you are at that level and you want that big money, you got to have some entertainment value. And unfortunately, he does not have that same, I don't know what you call it, the mystique or the magic or the, or just flat-out power of a Tank Davis, who gives you something to really talk about. And Shakur Stevenson is still one of the very best boxers and one of the toughest outs in boxing, but it does not resonate. And keep this in mind, guys, that crowd in Newark at the Prudential Center, that's his hometown.
Yep.
It's not a bunch of guys like you and me and here in Vegas. Because, you know, look, some of that happened back in November when he fought De Los Santos. I was at that fight ringside, and a lot of people bolted early, okay, on that Thursday night. But when your own hometown, with many people that look just like you, decide it's just better to beat traffic, it is a bit alarming.
Especially, Steve, when I was watching at my house here in Vegas, and it started at around just before 8:30. So it's 11:30 out there. You better put on a show. And I want to take you back, because for me with Shakur Stevenson, it was at Virgin Hotels against Jeremiah Nakatia.
Yeah.
It was that fight where we asked him, I asked him specifically, why did you look so hesitant at times? Why were you second-guessing your confidence? What was it? But you did not look like the fighter we know you are. And he actually admitted that this dude was tougher and he was trying to figure out midway through. And you think a guy like this, midway through, you should already know what you're supposed to do. He hasn't had the same confidence since that fight.
You know, he's had some pretty good performances since that particular bout. But that was about, I don't know if you ever saw the ESPN broadcast.
Yeah.
But, you know, the last 5 seconds, Tim Bradley, God bless Tim Bradley, he blurted out, guys, I needed a pillow to get through this fight. Or something to that effect. Everyone just went nuts. And you know, look, the one thing about Shakur Stevenson that I think is even worse than the way he fights at times, or the lack of drama or fireworks, it's his attitude.
Yeah.
He comes off as petulant, bratty, and entitled, and he doesn't understand. We are not his publicists. And, you know, our job is to be fair and accurate. I've written a lot of, I would say, favorable, positive, and accurate things about Shakur. But, you know, it's one thing to say, well, Steve Kim never boxed. You're right. It's not going to change my opinions on anything. It's my job is to give an opinion. But he's going after established fighters like Ishae Smith, yep, who won a world title, mm-hmm, Marcus Brown, who was an Olympian, fought for a world title against Beterbiev. So it's not just guys like you and us and I that never box that want to see, you know, bloodshed, right, and violence. There are guys that actually did this at a high level that aren't particularly entertained by Shakur, and he needs to come to grips with that.
Would this be safe at saying at times these are guys where their cables are crossed, meaning Shakur at times looks passive where he should be more aggressive in the ring, but he's aggressive at his post-game pressers. Whereas Tank, I was just there the other night at MGM, this guy is a pit bull in the ring. At times, when you expect him to be braggadocious, he's humble at his presser.
Yeah, that's the ironic part. You know, I was talking about this with somebody in boxing. If you look at the younger guys, Teofimo, Ryan, Tank, and now Shakur, and again, I am not making a judgment on whatever legal issues anyone has had, but the fact that Tank Davis is actually like the voice of reason out of that quartet, I don't know if that's an indictment or a sad commentary on what is taking place in boxing. But, you know, Shakur, again, nobody likes to hear whining. You want to be a free agent. You don't think Top Rank values you. Well, guess what, guys? You get to be a free agent. You get to test your value on the open market to all comers. And, you know, I don't know if your audience knows this, but look, about 3-4 months ago, and I remember talking to Bob Arum about this, even after that De Los Santos fight, they offered him a 5-fight deal with a minimum $3 million per fight. So that money could go up depending on who he faces. They decided to bypass it. Well, I don't know if Shakur wants this out there, but last month when Top Rank was having their show in New York, first week of June, representatives of Shakur tried to circle back to see if they could maybe rekindle the talks with Top Rank. And my understanding is that those talks didn't go anywhere. So you could say all you want about Top Rank not knowing how to handle black fighters, that there's an overt racism that exists over there. Well, bottom line is, number one, you signed with that company, and you admit they did a good job developing your career. Number two, as of a couple weeks ago, you were still trying to be affiliated with them.
Steve Kim is with us. Spot is brought to you by Snack Nutrition. You can read his write-up about William Zepeda and the weekend of Shakur Stevenson as well. Let's talk about Zepeda, who gets another finish. He's got like a, whatever it is, like 85% KO rate in his 31 wins. What do you think of his fight, and what's in the future for him?
It didn't really surprise me. I thought Cabrera was another guy that he was going to walk through, and he basically did. He had problems for about 2.5 minutes with the very awkward, difficult, unorthodox style of Cabrera. But look, as you mentioned, Steve, he's 31-0, 28 knockouts. As George Allen once said famously, the future is now. You're number one in all four sanctioning bodies, and I was able to talk to Oscar De La Hoya as he was running out of the arena, and he said, yeah, title shot. And look, they want to target Dennis Baranchik, because quite frankly, he's probably the path of least resistance. But Zepeda is a guy who's really the antithesis of Shakur. Does not make him better, because I think Shakur may still outbox him. But when he fights, it's demolition. Derby, it's fun, and something happens.
Let's talk about the fight that's on the way this weekend. How big is this fight with Janibek?
Not really big. It's kind of a placeholder. It's a way for him to make money. There's probably a contract that has to be fulfilled. Hopefully, Janibek can maybe fight a Carlos Adames, who is also a world champion at 160. 160 right now, guys, is a bit of a black hole. Bernard Hopkins ain't walking through that door. Roy Jones ain't walking through that door. Marvin Hagler ain't walking through that door. But I think this weekend, Steve, there's going to be two really good fighters, Janibek on ESPN, and then the matchroom debut of Jaron Boots Ennis, who I'm sky high on, in Philadelphia, defending his IBF welterweight title. Quite frankly, both fights are very, very heavily stilted in one direction. I think the chalk's going to play out here. Both of those guys need better dance partners moving forward.
Steve Kim, 323, up on Twitter. Lots of boxing, lots of other stuff, highly entertaining, threads going on all the time. You had turned me on to a dude who's up there making a bunch of videos. It's, Ak Nation or AK Nation, and I saw his video where he says, Caitlin Clark, Rookie of the Year, don't worry about that. Give her the MVP. What? What? What?
Okay, he was being a little tongue-in-cheek, because okay, that's what he does, Ak. Okay. But I think he's making a point. He's trying to hammer it home that, hey, guys, this race really should not be that close for Rookie of the Year. And me and Whitlock talked about this today. There's now this agenda to say, well, we're going to factor in the records, okay, which has never really been part of the Rookie of the Year race. But think about this. About 3 weeks ago, what was the knock on Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever? That, number one, they couldn't win. Right. Then they couldn't win against good teams. And that they weren't in the playoff race. All three of those things have been eradicated in large part, not all of it, but in large part, to that young lady out of Iowa City.
Okay, let me ask you a quick question, Steve. Who is the runaway MVP this year?
In the WNBA?
Yes.
You're asking me?
Yes. It's Asia Wilson, but guess what?
Lisa Leslie.
But guess what? Las Vegas is like in fourth. They've been in fourth and fifth place for the last 2 weeks because they were 6-6. Nobody's talking about wins and losses. They're talking about how good Asia Wilson is. So
yeah, and I'm just being tongue-in-cheek. I know Asia Wilson is dominating.
Yeah.
But I have a question, though, guys. It seems like in a lot of other sports now, especially with, like, the Heisman Trophy, that winning is factored into it. Does that apply in the WNBA?
I don't think it should apply, really, because it's supposed to
for
be
for Rookie
the MVP
of the Year or MVP? Well, for MVP, absolutely it should be factored in. And I brought this up last week because Monica McNutt was also doing the Rookie of the Year standings. Listen, if the Liberty go 30-10 this year, and, you know, I know being 7 games behind doesn't sound like you're crazy behind, but it's only a 40-game season. If they're 30-10 and the Aces are 23-17, then, yeah, I think winning should be part of it. Now, the touche to that would be Asia Wilson's numbers are just so dominating that she overcomes that.
Well, look, here's the thing that's interesting. People overlook Caitlin Clark came to the worst team. There's a reason why they had the number one pick.
Yeah.
So if you can take a team that had the number one pick because they were bad, it wasn't traded into that position to even make the playoff, that alone already says, wow, that's the impact that she helped make. But, guys, I remember way back when I was a kid, 1987, I'm going baseball here, Andre Dawson had a monster year for the Cubs, right?
Yep.
That team didn't come anywhere near making the playoffs, but he won the MVP, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if that could happen nowadays in really most sports.
Well, look, all I know is you may not have ever been in the ring, but you got Hey Kool-Aid in your profile pic, and that's good enough for me. You got my vote.
All right, I can say to that is, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's hit this one because you mentioned Whitlock. You guys were discussing Bronny James. Is the drafting of Bronny James and him being given a little more money than usually goes to the 55th pick, do you think it's turning off other players around the NBA and more specifically a guy like Klay Thompson who passed on the Lakers for the Mavs?
Look, that's an interesting thing with Klay Thompson. I get the sense, and again, I don't know if this has to do with Bronny, but given the state of the Laker organization and who's in charge, it's no longer Jerry Buss and Jerry West. God rest the soul of both those great men. And the fact that playing with Bron comes with issues. If you are a player of note with options, the Lakers are no longer, I think, this slam dunk to land a lot of free agents. And you have the tax situation. People care about their money. And people want to win. And now DeMar DeRozan, who's a guy that went to USC, I believe, out here from L.A.,
yeah.
He decided to bypass on the purple and gold. So I don't know. I mean, the whole Bronny thing is interesting to me. Is it? Look, I don't really keep track of it like I used to, but is he already load managing in summer league? Oh, God. Jeez.
Wait, are they – you talked about this last week, right, Willie? Just about shutting him down at a certain point?
At some point, I had said that you could – any specific situation with Bronny James, you could shut him down. If he's doing really well, you could say, okay, we've seen enough. If he's doing really bad, we shut him down. If he jams a finger, you can he's the one player where, yes, you could load manage this guy for one of many reasons.
Yeah, I just love the fact – I love his consistency. He was a four-point scorer at USC, and what did he give us in his debut? 4 points. That's the hallmark of a real player, right? I mean, look, I think it's a novelty, and do I think that there's a group of players that are probably looking at him very skeptically? Yes. Now, they're not allowed to say it publicly because they don't want the scrutiny. They don't want the heat. A lot of the media, because of the tentacles of Clutch Sports, they're certainly not going to say it. But to me, as a Laker fan in recess, until that guy leaves, I look at this and I'm like, this used to be a serious franchise, and now it's not.
We got less than a minute. I'll just throw it out there. Is Bronny a victim?
No. He's the beneficiary of some treatment that a lot of people get.
Okay.
And I don't really have an issue with it. That's just the fact of life. Life is not fair. I think how he handles it is going to be really key. I think if he's low-key and doesn't try to say too much or do too much, he'll be fine.
Right.
But I don't know if he's a victim. I really think a lot of the heat eventually is going to come on the father and the people that really enabled all of this, from the Laker organization to a certain father.
All right, Steve. Good spot, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. I'll see you guys soon. Thank you.
Snack Nutrition, Snack System. Help presenting Steve every week here on Cofield and Company. The reason I asked about the victim thing is he is being put in a position to be hated on by a lot of people. He's not ready for the NBA. He's really a G leaguer. And I don't know if this was his wish. Hey, I want to play with Dad, or LeBron was like, no, you're leaving school. I mean, realistically, the kid probably should have told his father, like, I need a couple more years of school. I got to develop. I got to go against that level of talent before I try the NBA, Dad.